in primary care. This session is part three of a five-part series on improving the process of cancer care, sponsored by the National Cancer Institute's Division of Cancer Control and Population Sciences. I have a few housekeeping items to address before we proceed. This webinar is being recorded, as you just heard. If someone has technical difficulties, they may email pc3cyberdiscussions@icfi.com. Please mute your line to eliminate background noise when you're not speaking. If you have a question, please use the raise hand tool on the top toolbar of your screen and use the drop-down person icon on the raise hand feature. Or you may type your question in the chat function. Please include your name and organization so that we know who you are. Please note all messages in the chat function are also recorded. The purpose of the series is to engage and solicit opinions from groups of researchers, healthcare providers, managers, and business people who spend a lot of time thinking about healthcare quality and how to deliver better care. Each session within our series focuses on a particular topic that exposes challenges and barriers to effective teamwork. Within the process of care branch, we are interested in developing more research on how to deliver better care as opposed to what care is actually delivered. So the purpose of the series is to help us identify a set of potential research topics that will address how healthcare teams improve processes of care, which leads to better health outcomes. We invite you to participate during the discussion period. We'd like to understand your perspective and any research questions you've identified in the background reading as well as in the case study that you received yesterday. And also, we have two additional sessions in our five-part series. Our next session after today's session will be on November the 5th, and the topic of that discussion will be research priorities in cancer care teams research, and that will be delivered by Dr. Eduardo Salas from the University of Central Florida. And our last presentation in our series is on July the 1st, 2015, and that topic is going to be given by Dr. Stephen Fiore, also from the University of Central Florida. And he will be speaking on team cognition, understanding the factors that drive process and performance. Please share registration information with colleagues you think may want to join our conversation on improving the process of care from effective healthcare teams. We're looking forward to engaging more individuals in our conversation on identifying research priorities in the areas of healthcare teams. And so before we begin our presentation, we want to solicit your opinion on an original case study about Mrs. Q, which we hope brings out issues and challenges with multi-teams working together. Patient-centered care, measurements of evaluation, and strategies needed for care transition to flow seamlessly between multiple providers. I'll turn it over now to Andrew J. Downey to review highlights of the case study.
Thanks, Veronica. So the case with Mrs. Q is regarding a couple who's getting ready to retire. The husband is a busy surgeon and the wife is a medical assistant at an optometry office. The wife has multiple chronic conditions and has a family history which ensures she's active in her health. Her conditions include stage 2A breast cancer, heartburn, and hypertension. And because she's recently retiring, or she's getting ready to retire, she's transitioning to a new healthcare plan and is also moving to a new primary care physician who is undergoing a shift to an electronic healthcare database system. She was able to secure the same oncologist, so that hasn't changed, and she's happy with his performance and the outcomes from him. Upon the next visit with the primary care physician, everything was going well, and she received the care that she wanted from the primary care physician, and was prescribed the medication to continue with her past prescriptions with her previous primary care physician. When going to the primary care physician for an update, they found that one of the medications that was prescribed was originally for the heartburn medication was one that negatively interacted with the tamoxifen that was given for her stage 2A breast cancer and was reducing its effectiveness. And the reason for that was a misinterpretation of the original primary care physician's handwriting by the administrative assistant and the new primary care physicians transition to the electronic system. So in that situation, he quickly corrected her, and now she is receiving the correct prescription for her heartburn, which is interacting with her tamoxifen. And that's essentially the case.
So if the phones can be unmuted, if anyone has any comments on the case relative to issues of measurement, issues of dealing with multiple teams, any notices and recognition of breakdown in communication or other teamwork principles that were violated in this case that you would like to discuss.
Can we hear from?
Yeah, they're on you.
Ingrid, you're the expert on measurement. So one of the issues here is coordination. I wondered if you had any comments about the complexity of the coordination challenge here. So coordination between two primary care docs and an oncologist around what is really a pretty simple medication, tamoxifen, and something for heartburn. I know you're there, Ingrid. I can see you.
Sorry, I just realized I had myself on mute. I was talking to myself. that's always good. I will comment on that, but what struck me in this case was the coordination that's necessary when you transition from paper to electronic. Because it seemed as though that was part of the handwriting issue that occurred in a miscommunication there was striking to me. I think in terms of coordination itself, it raised the question for me of where the burden lies. Who should be responsible for coordinating in this situation? Does the coordination fall to the previous primary care clinician to ensure that the transition occurs smoothly, or to the newly selected primary physician going forward? For me, that was a question of who bears the responsibility in this relationship. I think it's easy to identify who the parties are, but even within coordination, there's still what I think this case raises for me is coordination along with accountability and responsibility, and being clear even within the domain of teamwork, who is the, I guess you've used the term quarterback in the past, who's the person who holds on to that role, and that still isn't quite clear to me even in a situation such as this.
I think it's an interesting question. My bet is that the doc who prescribed, whose name is on the wrong prescription, is the one who would be held accountable. But in a team situation, which is what this is, person who couldn't read the handwriting. I mean, a question that comes up in my mind in this case is, what's the culture, what's the environment in which that person who's translating that handwriting is living? So is she or he comfortable saying, I can't read this writing, I'm not going to fake it, or is she or he intimidated and pressured by the time, and so just chooses something on the drop-down menu of the electronic medical record rather than raising the question, what is this? I better be sure this is right. So I wonder about, yes, you could hold the doc accountable, and I think the doc is ultimately accountable, but this situation raises the question for me, what's the environment, what's the culture, do they work together as a group, and do they create an environment in which the group can work and identify potential errors freely? Or is it an intimidating one in which what we got to do is get the next patient through, don't ask me any questions to slow me down?
There could also be issues of training, when in doubt, ask.
Yeah.
And so she may not have been properly trained and informed. If she had any concerns, she should have asked questions to double check before she ordered the prescription.
So
other
I think...
comment. Go ahead.
So I think, I mean, as someone who's written a lot about climate and psychological safety, and so tries to get out of that sometimes when I can. But I guess I want to echo that I think there is always something to be said for whether or not you feel comfortable asking and whether or not you realize, and I didn't have the case attached to this, so I couldn't see what how much ambiguity there was around the person who actually made the prescription. But I think thinking about whether you're even cognizant of it, and so that might even say, there's a culture of whether or not you speak up, but also a culture that reinforces reliability, or a climate that reinforces reliability. So systems that allow us to double check each other, even if we don't realize that we're walking into a situation or making a mistake or an error. So the climate for psychological safety combined with a climate for reliability within the team.
I think it's a good question, Ingrid. I think it's a great question in this case as well, because even if the handwriting had been right and that had been the right prescription, would the primary care doc have known that there's this interaction between the medication and tamoxifen?
Right.
Did he know or she know that the patient was on tamoxifen? What's the connection between the oncologist who's prescribing that tamoxifen and the primary care doc, have they ever talked about? So it's possible that he could have read the writing right, put it up, and written the wrong prescription because of his ignorance,
right,
about, or her ignorance about the interaction, which I think is another area where I think Rick's group and AHRQ has done a lot of work on medication errors and the involvement of pharmacy in teams and in healthcare and hospitals in particular.
Through team steps.
Yeah, through team steps, but also through research showing that two things. One, that culture is the most important predictor of whether or not people fix potential errors or reduce potential errors in medication. And involving a pharmacist in the team is another way.
Any other comments before we go on?
Oh, hi, this is Leanne Fall. I'm at Georgetown Lombardi Cancer Center. And I was struck by, you know, not just on the end where the assistant had misread the writing, but if the actual patient sort of medical knowledge was working against her at this point, so that, you know, her assumption that, oh, the pill looks different, this must be a generic equivalent or, you know, some sort of substitution, you know, so her sort of knowing that and making that assumption and then not circling back, you know, with her pharmacist or with somebody else to say, is this the med that's right? This is the one I'm supposed to be on. So she had a little bit of, you know, where a little bit of knowledge hurts you.
Yeah. That's a good point. That raises the whole role of the role and responsibility of the patient in the situation. And again, the issue of ignorance. So assuming that everybody else is right, so it must be, everybody else has got more power, so they must be right. Good point.
Okay, let's spend a few minutes now in transition. Thank you for your comments on the case study. There may be more after you hear Dr. Ricciardi's presentation. So I am honored to introduce our guest speaker today. It's Dr. Richard Ricciardi. He is a health scientist in the Center for Primary Care Prevention and Clinical Partnerships at the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Before joining AHRQ in 2010, Dr. Ricciardi served on active duty for 30 years and had numerous positions in the Department of Defense, working as a nurse practitioner, senior leader, and clinical scientist. His research interests include disease prevention and health promotion, human performance and fitness, and the delivery and organization of primary health care. And again, Dr. Ricciardi's presentation today is on team-based measures in primary care. Dr. Ricciardi, you can take it away.
Thanks, Veronica. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you all this morning or this afternoon, and I'd like to extend my welcome to all of you as well. And on behalf of ARC, I would like to thank Steve and Veronica for this opportunity to share with you some of our ongoing work on team-based care, and specifically today on team-based care measurement. Many of the points that you have brought out in the warm-up discussion were very pertinent to some of the discussions we had both with the team, which you see on slide two, that were integral, the contributors to this work on the left, and also notwithstanding the great input from the expert panel that we met with three times to inform our work and to provide us with ideas. On there, you do see Eduardo Salas, who I had the opportunity to meet. So I would say, buckle up your seatbelts for your next presentation. Eduardo is somebody who has a great command of this scientific body of work, and it should be an exciting presentation in November. He's considered one of the subject matter experts on team-based science. So it's exciting that you have him to come in November. The next slide will extend out the disclosures and that this work was under contract through ARC, et cetera, the obligatory disclosure. The next slide will have the objectives for today, which is to provide all of you and to get feedback from all of you on ARC's work on team-based care measurement, specifically looking at our development of a theoretically grounded conceptual framework for measurement of team-based primary care. We were specifically looking at primary care, but we have fun extending that outside of primary care today. To conduct an environmental scan, a fairly extensive environmental scan to identify and assess instruments to measure teamwork in primary care, and ultimately to create for all of you and the public an available web-based searchable atlas or inventory of instruments that we've identified that could be useful to all of you in measuring and looking at ways to evaluate different domains in team-based care. And then finally, we hope to put forth some gaps in measurement of team-based care that could guide future work by both the ARC, perhaps the NIH, as well as others who are interested. In terms of the next slide, a little bit on the background of how we captured some of this information, particularly the research on teams is available and has been conducted in other sectors. I'm sure that most of you have heard of crew resource management, which is part of the aviation industry's looking at safety and developing strong teams. In addition to that, the Department of Defense and the warfighter community have done a lot of work on building teams around the areas of developing mutual support, situational awareness, which is sometimes referred to as watching each other's back, leadership, what are some of the common areas around leadership, and focus on, in the DoD, which would be considered mission, and in healthcare, we would consider that the plan of care or incorporating what the patient's needs and wants are, and the science which is delivered by the healthcare professionals in developing a core element of a plan of care. And that is seen as central to success of the team. Accumulating evidence that effective teams are associated with better outcomes has been ongoing, particularly when you look at the work that's being done around the patient-centered medical home. And for this case, one might consider it the patient-centered medical condominium, or maybe the patient-centered medical neighborhood, where we're extending out of the primary care, reaching out to the oncologist and the other subspecialists in Mrs. Q's chronic conditions. There's been increasing recognition that successful primary care redesign efforts, as well as all healthcare redesign efforts, will require high-functioning primary care teams as evidence to that. In NCQA, in their 2014 patient-centered medical home criteria, threaded throughout most of the criteria are evidence of teamwork and measurement of needs of teams and building strong teams. Again, research through both science and quality improvement efforts can help advance effective team-based primary care, and there's a lot of gaps in the need for measures in the background. And et cetera, you can read on that, the other background items, but specifically there is sort of an explosion in the educational community on interprofessional education, which is not a new topic. It's been going on for a decade. However, there seems to be some meat behind the theory now where many groups across the nation are looking at building formative training. So different groups of subspecialists, nursing, PT, OT, et cetera, working together at the formative stages to learn together and therefore work together better. So it's sometimes referred to in the physiologic world as muscle memory. So those that train together when you're out and delivering care, since you've done it before in the formative environment, you should be able to do it more effectively and efficiently. That's a big gap right now. So that's part of the background of what we use. The next slide will provide some of the references that if you want to, you can reach out to and look at. In order to move forward on this, we had to come up with some standard definitions. And for team-based care, the IOM definition was used. And the last part of it, I think, is most interesting to this discussion, where there are shared goals, there are patient shared goals across settings, i.e., whether you're transitioning to a new primary care environment, like in this case, or whether you're coordinating care with oncology or an internist or a group that are taking care of the complex conditions, to achieve coordinated and high quality care. Then we also, the next slide will demonstrate or illustrate the definition of primary care. And what's important to this discussion is that it's the provision of integrated accessible health care. In this case, we're looking at integrating the care across different groups or across the neighborhood, if you will, of care delivery. And then, of course, the IOM definition, the next slide will have the definition of a team that we used. The IOM definition describes the services delivered by a team, but does not define what a team is or how it works, nor does it describe the core properties or defining characteristics of a high-functioning primary care team. Although several definitions of this exist, the one that we've depicted here is the one of the most frequently referenced definitions in the organizational literature, where a team is a collection of individuals who are interdependent in their tasks, who share responsibility for outcomes, who see themselves and who are seen by others as an intact social entity embedded in one or more larger social systems, for example, business or in this case, healthcare, who manage their relationships across organizational boundaries. For this particular study, we were looking to develop a conceptual model where we reviewed over 3,200 abstracts and 45 suggested articles from our expert panel. Out of that, we identified 221 articles, of which 129 instruments were readily available. 64 of those 129 instruments mapped at the item level to the conceptual framework, which we will you'll get to see in two slides. 48 instruments met our inclusion criteria, and the potential relevance to measure teamwork and primary care were used on those 48 instruments. In order to maintain rigor, each of the instruments were evaluated systematically by two scientists. And if there was a disagreement, their evaluation was reconciled by another two scientists. And what we found is that most all instruments could map at least to two of the constructs. So the next slide, in terms of the conceptual framework, was through the literature review. And we used a fairly standard input mediator output back to the input, so a cyclic sort of a framework. The input, as you'll see in the next slide you can go to the next slide, on the conceptual model, the precursors or the preconditions for teams to exist, and there's a long list there. And then the mediators or enablers are in the center of the circle, which is where we are continuing to focus the majority of our work on this, looking at the cognitive, affective, relational, behavioral, and leadership domains as the central focus for teamwork and measurement of teamwork. The outputs are the results of effective teamwork in primary care, and looking at the triple aim as another output. So there's the four mediators or enablers in the conceptual model. Moving on, what we hope will be helpful to you all, particularly and from the discussions, is more explication of the domains and the 12 domains and the four concepts. And I'm only going to highlight some of these because we don't have time to go over each of them. But in terms of in the cognitive domain, if we look at shared explicit goals and accountability, which came up, which was a very astute observation in terms of one of the things that patients are very concerned about from our work is who is their go-to person. We really preach in team-based care that there's a participatory leadership characteristic. So the leader of the care is shifting from the patient to the oncologist, to the primary care provider, which could be a physician, an NP or a PA, or in chronic care, it could be the physical therapist or the occupational therapist, or for that matter, the audiologist, depending on where the patient is at across their continuum of care. So the effective team, the hub of the team, just like we discussed, the mission in the DoD is they actively adopt and agree upon a set of goals. So the patient is the expert. They're the subject matter expert on their care, their needs, and what they can do. The healthcare team is the expert on the science. How do we come upon an agreed set of goals and objective which are clearly articulated and which motivates them as a team and which we can put a measurement on to inform progress? So in this particular case, what was already brought up is that the patient did bear some responsibility. They identified that the pill was not the color that they were used to. However, whether it was trust, whether it was assumption that the healthcare team knew what they were doing, or many other possibilities, they didn't speak up. And in the culture of a healthy, high-functioning team, that patient would have spoken up and said, look, I'm confused by this. Please tell me what it is. Am I right? Am I wrong? If this is the correct drug, okay, I'm fine with it. The next slide, in terms of the effect of relational domain, an element of trust came up here, which was mentioned in the case study. And effective teams are able to act in a manner that reflects confidence in their ability and reliability of other team members. So there needs to be trust between the patient and the healthcare team and among the healthcare team interdependencies. Not only the knowledge of what each person's role is, but trust that each person can perform that role in a way that is acceptable to the rest of the team. And heedful interrelating, that's potentially part of what we were talking about in terms of accountability earlier. In the behavioral domain, which is the next slide, we get to responsibility again in terms of is the team adaptable to context and needs? Can we do improvisation? So in this particular case, was there effective practice as this patient moved across from one care provider to the next in looking at the new plan of care? Is there flexibility there in doing that, and how is flexibility and the learning process built into the team? Leadership, which we struggled on because leadership is both an input, because it's necessary to develop high-functioning teams and teams to have buy-in from the leaders, but there also is a component of leadership in the enabling high-functioning teams. So there's two levels of leadership that needs to be looked at and measured. The next slide will provide a highlight. When we pulled all these instruments out of the literature and we came down to the 48, what you see here is some of the specifics on the instruments. 44, no surprise, 44 were survey and 4 observational checklists. You can see the settings in which they were deployed. One of the things that is a challenge to us, when you look at the range of the total items in the instrument, you had from 6 to 94, and you all are well knowledgeable and informed that there isn't anyone who is looking at, you know, continuity of care or measurement of primary care that's going to go out and use an instrument with 94 items to look and see if they're making improvements. That's just not, you know, it's not something that people are going to do. So, but there's the range, and the populations that these instruments were directed to, you can see the physician community being the dominant, followed by nurses and other healthcare professionals. Now, interesting, I'll quickly go through these next three slides, which provides an overview of the instruments. And out of the 48 instruments, which surprised us, when you look at this slide, on the y-axis is the number of instruments out of the 48, and on the x-instruments, the domains that they actually measured, there was a fair amount of overlap and agreement that these particular instruments, there wasn't one particular domain that stood out, so which was of surprise to us. So 44, for example, 44 of the 48 instruments had some element of measuring the cognitive domain, realizing that most of these instruments each map to at least two of the mediator domains. When we get to the item level, which is the next slide, you see out of the specific items, again, there was a fairly good a number of items across all the domains, with the affective relational domain having the highest number of items at 601. And then looking at the specific mediator constructs, again, it's surprising. You can see that there was a fair number with the highest number of items measuring communication, no surprise there, with the IOM report, and much agreement at communication seems to be the root of a lot of safety errors and needs to be improved across teams. But then shared explicit goals, we rise by the number of items we're actually looking at. Do the teams, and are they affording the patient with shared specific goals to improve. So after that, we said, okay, how are we going to look at and identify some of the gaps, examining the extent to which instruments map the conceptual framework, and to solicit structured input, we solicit structured input from the individual expert panel to inform us on what our gaps may be, and then we discuss that input with both internally and with the expert panel. And there was some agreement on the gaps in the next slide that we need to incorporate the patient perspective into team-based primary care assessments, although more conceptual work is needed before instrument development occurs. So finally, like in the discussion, we did get to the patient, and we talked about the patient responsibility, but as you see, most of us didn't think there first. We originally went to, okay, was the prescribing provider responsible? Was the person who was reading the script responsible? And finally, the idea that the patient could take and is accountable for some of this. So, and that is also part of the measurement piece. There's very little on incorporating the patient perspective into team-based measurement and primary care. Another gap is we have to address the measurement challenges associated with aggregating at the unit level from individual clinicians, particularly when we look at primary care where there's one and two provider practices out there. And then my particular challenge, because I wanted some of this work to inform practice transformation and process improvement, and not only the research community, and we need to provide ways to support non-researchers who wish to use these instruments or develop new instruments by researchers to provide guidance and training on how to approach, use, and interpret results. So the non-research community, how do these instruments fit into a conceptual thinking of them? What are the psychometric properties, and whether they can, you know, understand what those properties are? How can it be administratively deployed? What are some of the challenges around that in an improvement process? And finally, but certainly not of the least importance, is how do we interpret these instruments? These instruments, many of which do not have national benchmarks. So if you were to do to deploy him and say, okay, let's get a baseline on how our team is doing in terms of trusting one another. You deploy an instrument, you get a number. What does that number mean? What does that tell an improvement person? How is that interpreted? The researcher would perhaps have a better feel for that, but the quality improvement person may or may not, the safety person, quality improvement person, may or may not have the type of skills that are necessary to make those kinds of assessments. So where are we going? We hope to, and we're on track, to provide to you all and the public a searchable database of these 48 instruments, which we hope will help to inform and measure team-based primary care. It will be able to be searched through many key characteristics and search terms. We'll provide a summary for each instrument, and it will be a resource, and we're also going to provide a resource to support measurement of the attributes of effective teamwork and what we hope to advance and improve team-based care, both in the primary care realm, but extending to that. As you know, that ARC has already published a care coordination atlas, which has some key terms and a framework to look at care coordination and is sort of a guiding light on looking at ways to measure care coordination. So this particular searchable website is due to come out in the fall. So finally, just to wrap it up, the majority of instruments that we looked at were from healthcare, though some were used from other sectors, and they were useful to inform our process of developing the conceptual model and which instruments to map to that model. The majority, it says some instruments, but most instruments will require some adaptation to be used in primary care setting. And most instruments address multiple conceptual model constructs, but with differing degrees of emphasis. No one particular measurement measured all of the constructs within the conceptual model. So Steve and Veronica, that's where we're at, and hopefully that provided an overview of our work in measurement on team-based care.
Thank you very much, and thank you for integrating components of the case into the discussion in terms of helping us identify where failures occurred in the four domains of your conceptual model. Are there any other comments or questions that anyone has for Dr. Ricciardi?
I have one. This is Steve. I have one to start. Your definition talked about shared common goals, and I think it's a pretty rare circumstance that primary care groups actually, within the primary care group, sit down and say, what's our goal? I would say it's even more extraordinary to think about that happening across. This case, though, raises the issue about do oncology, do the primary care teams share a common goal in the care of this patient? And have they ever sat down and talked about it? So I was struck in your presentation, Rick, that that was a common theme, that's a fundamental definition, is that there's a shared goal among the people that are being called the team. And then in the conceptualization, I didn't see it explicitly brought out, though your discussion of it said sense-making included establishing that goal. I wonder, to turn this into a question, to ask you, are you guys leading research? Is anybody looking carefully at the power and the importance of establishing that common goal?
If that's directed to me, many of you already know that other work that we're doing around this is involved engaging the multiple chronic condition patient. If you were to Google ARC and May, you'll see what I consider to be probably one of the best vignettes on this. We put together a very short story about a patient named May, who interestingly enough is a 57-year-old woman who has hypertension, diabetes, and how the healthcare system is fragmented and how we can come to some agreement in putting together a common care plan to include. May also had depression, which you see bringing in the mental health component within the multiple chronic condition community. So we and also HHS, through the MCC or multiple chronic condition framework, have provided a lot of work in this area and a lot of resources to include. We just funded two FOAs looking at ways to improve care to the multiple chronic condition patients. So, and in fact, some of those are also engaging patients with cancer, which is, you know, within the framework of MCC. So I think it's critical, and that's why within the cognitive domain, we need to have shared explicit goals and accountability for those goals. And what was adroitly brought up is that accountability and responsibility is a challenge in coming on who is that go-to person and how that go-to person flows across. But certainly the coming together, if you watch the May video, the coming together of the oncologist, the mental health community, the primary care community, the patient and their significant family that are involved in the patient's care, to put forth that set of goals is critical. That's the critical link. If we don't do that, we will not be successful.
I was looking at the results item level and the mediator construct, because I didn't see anything here relative to organizational support for an environment that would promote effective teamwork.
That's in the inputs. If you look at the one of the things, like I said, with leadership, leadership must also provide the environment where that's conducive to building teams. For example, some healthcare systems, when you talk to them and you say, okay, we want to talk about teams and particularly using team steps to build teams across your healthcare system, if they have no interest, it will not be successful. So when you look at the model, there is in the input section the concept of leadership and psychological safety, which was brought up. It's a huge component in building optimal teams, and that particular environment, the culture of that environment, needs to be throughout the healthcare system, not just isolated teams, which perhaps could be the root of getting the leadership to buy in, but it will not be. Our work demonstrates that individual teams will have very difficult time being successful building high-functioning teams if it's not in the culture of where their leadership has buy-in, particularly around psychological safety.
This is Ingrid. I have two questions. I'm curious whether your expert panel, or whether this was raised with them, was there any consensus about four components of teamwork? So there are many dimensions within the conceptual model, and we found that in the work that we've done too. You were fortunate enough to have these great minds in the room to think about this, and I'm curious whether there was any consensus. That was one question. And my second question, which I think is important, you raise this idea of incorporating the patient, which also implies surveying the patient about teamwork. Have you seen any practice that give the same survey to both patients and providers?
I don't know if it's the same survey, but I do know across the practice-based research community, they do have, and across the FQHCs, the Federal Qualified Health Centers, they have huge patient engagement opportunities to have, where they have patient advisory panels, they have patient input on boards of directors, et cetera. So patients are provided opportunities for input. I don't know, I can't specifically ask on whether the surveys that are used to ask patients about the care, you know, or are the same that they use for the providers. I know that the HCAP survey is, you know, engaging patients and asking about providers and systems and all many other areas of it. But I do know that particularly in FQHCs and many other healthcare systems, patients are becoming a more active component of how they address success and do process improvement.
That's helpful.
do you have your hand up?
No, I don't think I did. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
Other comments and questions?
I'll return to my first question about any consensus about core components. If one of the things that I've encountered in surveying about teamwork is that you can ask about all of these various dimensions, and you're, as you said, you cannot ask 94 questions, so you have to drill it down to essential elements, and part of that will be determined by what you want to study. But I'm curious whether or not your expert said you absolutely have to ask about these four domains or these five domains.
Well, that's a great question, and I believe that there was some common consensus around the fact that there you need to have a shared mental model.
Mm-hmm.
That's one, and there was agreement across that. You needed to build a culture where respectful interactions could occur, so you had the psychological safety.
Mm-hmm.
And you also needed to have a communication ability that allows for a learning network. There needs to seem to be agreement that, you know, that we realize that we can always do something better, and there needs to be an environment where learning takes place and people are not penalized, for, I don't want to say making mistakes, but for making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then you learn from that. There was consensus over that. And also, seems to be consensus over the concept of participatory leadership.
Okay.
That leadership cannot be dictatorial or prescriptive. That in order to have effective teams, there needs to be an element where the leaders can change
mm-hmm.
based on where the patient is across the healthcare system. And that takes trust, which is another essential component of basically, you know, everyone needs to leave their ego at the door.
Right.
And trust is an important element of that because some people feel conflicted about that if they give up control, that if there is some potential error, that it falls back on them. And I think that in the current system, where it's changed to, you know, the IOM report brings up a lot of that, you know, that many times it's a system that has let the provider down or the nurse down, and that's how an error occurred. So we need to have a systems level thinking on a team, and that system could be the neighborhood, it could be the condominium, or it could be the individual primary care, and that team changes. I think that's the challenge we have in measuring it. When you're looking at measurement, are you measuring the primary, the core team? Are you measuring the extended team? And it's different. There's different ways to do that. So that's a very good question, one that we're challenged with, and we hope over the next decade that you researchers can come up with solutions to. How can we effectively and efficiently look at these domains and measure them both from a quality improvement perspective, but also from a triple aim perspective.
Rick, that last question I think is a really interesting one and a really good one. And maybe, for the purpose of the discussion, an area where we might want to differ a little bit. I think the literature talks about multi-team systems, and we're particularly at NCI interested in promoting work in that area since you guys are pretty focused on the primary care world and building that teamwork. We're trying to develop an area which complements what you're doing. And one of those areas is thinking about the system not as one big, huge team, but as complementary or as a multi-team system. So there's a primary care team, there's an oncology team, there's a radiology team, and the question is how do those teams interact? So, and it also gets back to, I think, the issue that you were raising earlier, or I raised earlier about have those teams ever gotten together and established a common goal, and would anybody in the world see those groups as a team together, anybody besides the patient who's involved in all three of them. So I think this, to me, there's a fundamental question about whether, in fact, there is an Uber team, there's something that's all the components, or in fact, it's better to think about this as a multi-team system, and we may get more traction and have more chances of improvement if we do that. So just a comment, and I'm open to your response.
Well, my response on that is I think you hit it right. My experience, for example, where I practice, if I have a patient, you know, that comes in with fatigue and they look pallor and I draw their blood and it turns out they have leukemia and I refer them to oncology, that patient now sees that oncologist as their primary care team. The world of oncology is very unique, is that because you have a comprehensive approach to the patient, frequently, in my experience, until that patient's cancer is stabilized, whether it's through treatments or they're in a survivor mode, they frequently see their oncology team as their team. And the primary care team sort of takes a back seat. That's my personal experience and what I've read, and I'm talking to a lot of other primary care and oncology. So you're exactly right. You know, it's somewhat unique in oncology versus the cardiology team to a degree. If someone has an MI and, you know, they go in and they get that treated, or whether they have thoracic surgery provide them with a bypass and they're stabilized again, then they come back to primary care. You know, how the concept of survivorship in oncology is one that fascinates me, because those of us in primary care look a lot to the oncology community to help us to understand what we need to do when the patient is in the survivorship mode. So that we put these somewhat artificial, I guess, systems in place. When I'm saying in some ways it's really one team, but there are core elements to each of those teams which are, as you said, unique. But in the overall perspective of the patient, I think we all need to somehow figure out a way to work together. I don't know if that answers your question or brings up more questions.
I think it brings up more questions, which is great, because we're a research institution, so that's part of what we need to do is generate questions.
Hi, this is Leanne, still at Georgetown Lombardi. I'm really glad that you touched on the contrast to cardiac patients, because I have worked with some colleagues who are young professionals like me in the field, but have that history of knowledge of what it took to hand off those transitions for somebody who has a pretty significant cardiac event. So you have the cardiac thoracic surgeon and the cardiac rehab piece and the cardiologist and the primary care, and you know, back when all of those things were sort of new, people were actually living through MIs, which hasn't been all that long ago. It seemed like all of those subdisciplines had to work it out and how to figure out the handoff, because I think, you know, the handoff is where the care transitions is where a lot of the trouble starts. It's not as clear with cancer patients transitioning to survivorship. You know, that handoff isn't as specified or delineated very well. So I think we have a lot to learn from, you know, potentially cardiovascular medicine in that. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, because they've already been through that as a field. So
I think it's an interesting question, and there's an article coming up in the Journal of Oncology Practice. This is a survey of patients in Israel, actually, asking them who they think, who they want involved in their care during chemotherapy. And it's interesting that within that group, they identify that they think of their oncologist as being the primary group to deliver their oncology care. They definitely want their primary care doc involved, but they think their primary care doc is basically incompetent to deal with the oncology issue. So it's a very interesting set of pieces of information that I think may have relevance to what we're doing here too. And I think also are raising the issues as we look forward into the issues of workforce, that there aren't enough oncologists out there to deal with people with multiple chronic conditions. And multiple chronic conditions is a good thing to watch. Only 10% of cancer patients have only cancer. 90% have some other condition as well. So it's I think it is both impractical and impossible for the oncologist to manage it all alone, to manage a patient all alone. They can manage a disease all alone, but they can't manage a patient all alone. So I think there's definitely work to do to figure out how to make this, how to share care, and how to make this multi-team system or Uber team work.
We have one last question.
Yes, I'm Miho Tanaka from PCRB in NCI. My question is about the use of the web-based Atlas of team-based care instruments, because we did have, in NCI, we did have repository of shared decision-making measures, which I and Sarah Coughlin created about 2 years ago. And our intention was that we wanted to put out this website, which is a repository of constructs and also measurement of shared decision-making related constructs and variables. And then we wanted the researcher, investigator to come back to our repository and website and use it for their research and give us a feedback of the usability of those instruments and the constructs and the variables and instruments. So I was wondering that in AHRQ, what are the vision for using the website which you are about to put out? I think it's wonderful. I think it's good that possibly, you know, investigators can go back and look at what kind of instruments and constructs and items are available in the current field of team-based care. So I'm just wondering what your vision is and then how you want to promote and disseminate to the research community.
That's a great question, and we had envisioned this as providing the fundamental underpinnings for future research. The government frequently, as you said, sometimes has to take the first step in putting some sort of framework together and convene different groups, because the government is very good at convening and bringing groups together to inform perhaps future research. So what we had hoped was that, one, this would identify baseline what some instruments are, two, what some of the gaps are, and would also be a springboard for future work by academic communities, perhaps future government FOAs, as well as opportunity for other groups that were interested in team-based care to come forward and to take interest in this. So I don't know, because I don't have a crystal ball. As you know, many times we do these things, and in terms of the dissemination and implementation science, we fall short. And I'm going to try not to do that, but it's a point that I've been thinking about, is that, you know, where do we go next? And those of you at NIH and other federal employees can appreciate the challenges that we as science officers have in understanding what the budget is and where we can go next in an environment of budgetary challenges. So sometimes we live in the moment, but we try not to. And I hope that we can in 15 garner some money from the 15 budget to move forward to advance this work in instrument development and testing. But that's a really good point, one that keeps me up at night, because I don't want this work to just sit on someone's desk and collect dust. I do want the work to continue to evolve and grow.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Dr. Ricciardi, for an excellent presentation. Thank you to all the participants who joined the discussion. And I hope that we all can come back together for our next talk on November the 5th, 2014, on research priorities in cancer care teams research by Dr. Eduardo Salas. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
I'll put another plug in for Eduardo. He's awesome.